Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
President Biden kicks off a high-stakes trip to the Middle East. And the war in Ukraine is pushing millions more people into food insecurity.
The Russian invasion in Ukraine came for Somalia and the broader Horn of Africa region at a really bad time. They are going through the worst drought in 40 years.
Plus, what's behind a stronger U.S. dollar? It's Thursday, July 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. President Biden is in Israel as part of a four-day trip to the Middle East. The U.S. says the trip, which also includes a visit to Saudi Arabia, is meant to strengthen ties between the three countries and promote stability. Our correspondent Dov Lieber has more on Biden's goals and challenges.
Mr. Biden hopes to strengthen the U.S.-Israel security relationship, coordinate their effort to prevent Iran from building nuclear weapons and halting militant activities across the region, and advance efforts to create a Middle East security alliance between Israel and Arab countries in the region. With the Palestinians, he'll hope to bring some economic incentives. His main goal when he goes to Saudi Arabia will be getting the Saudis to pump more oil to hopefully decrease energy prices in the U.S. But Mr. Biden faces tough challenges to most of his goals on this trip.
The International Monetary Fund has agreed to a $4 billion bailout of Pakistan as emerging markets are coming under increasing pressure due to global inflation and the war in Ukraine. The funding is key to the plan of the new Pakistani government to stabilize the country's economy and avoid a financial meltdown similar to the one in Sri Lanka. Pakistan's finance minister says the country came close to defaulting in recent weeks. Panasonic, Tesla's main battery supplier in the U.S., plans to build a $4 billion electric vehicle battery factory in Kansas. The state offered a package of subsidies to Panasonic, including tax credits, beating out Oklahoma. Kansas Governor Laura Kelly said it's the largest private investment in the state's history and is expected to create as many as 4,000 direct jobs. Panasonic is competing with larger rivals for a share of the EV market. The new plant comes as Tesla plans to boost U.S. production, including at a factory in Austin, Texas, that started delivering vehicles in April. Cryptocurrency lender Celsius Network has filed for bankruptcy protection. This comes a month after it halted withdrawals in the wake of a collapse in digital currency prices that stretched the platform's business model past the breaking point. Our Wall Street Journal markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff explains what this means for other crypto lenders.
We still don't really know if any other firms are very exposed to Celsius, if Celsius being unable to repay them in any kind of short-term period winds up posing to their financial stability. It's not quite clear yet. And so I think a lot of people in the space are kind of bracing themselves to see if there is more bankruptcies, more volatility to be had.
And four American oil and gas companies, Hilcorp Energy, ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and Occidental Petroleum, are the industry's top emitters of greenhouse gases, including methane, in the U.S. That's according to a new report by the environmental nonprofit groups Ceres and Clean Air Task Force, which used federal data submitted to the Environmental Protection Agency to compile its report. The groups say the rankings could help inform investors, buyers, and policymakers. In a new currency battle, the U.S. seems to be winning the fight to strengthen the dollar. The Federal Reserve proved the most powerful and most aggressive of the major central banks, and the dollar swung to help it, first down, now up. The scale of the recent move in the dollar is unusual, and it's the level that really stands out. The greenback has been hovering around parity with the euro, and it's the strongest against the yen since 1998. Joining me now with more on this is senior markets columnist James McIntosh. Hi, James. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi. Thanks.
So, James, why is the dollar showing such strength right now?
So there's two main reasons and then a secondary reason. The main reason is that the U.S. economy is better, which means higher interest rates from the Fed. And the combination of those two just means you get a stronger currency compared with everywhere else. And then the secondary reason is that there are rising fears of recession, which is odd given that the US is stronger than everywhere else. But even in bad news, the odds are that the US is still likely to be better than other places. The Europeans in particular, highly exposed to the problem of imported gas from Russia. And there's a very deep worry at the moment in Germany in particular that they might actually have to start rationing gas to industry, which would crush their major heavy industry and hurt exports, which again hurts the currency.
What impact does the relative strength of the dollar compared to other currency have on the US economy right now in terms of things like purchasing power?
So it has a bit of an effect. The US is a fairly closed economy. It's not reliant on imports and exports. But if you're thinking of buying something that's imported, now's a good time. In particular, if you're thinking of going on holiday, now's a great time for an American. They get to buy a lot more in Europe than a year ago. They get to buy even more in Japan. Now, Japan's not a cheap place, but it's a lot cheaper than it was.
So, James, what if anything might trigger a turnaround in what we're seeing here?
So the single biggest factor that might act here is that Russia decides to keep supplying gas to Germany. If Russia decides to keep on supplying that gas, then that will relieve some of the market concern about the German economy and so about the euro. But on a bigger picture, probably the main thing would be that the Fed decides to be more dovish or makes clear that it's going to be more dovish. No one expects that. So if that happened, that would be a very big shift in the currency.
That's Wall Street Journal senior markets columnist James McIntosh. James, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up, how the war in Ukraine is intensifying a global food crisis.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Russia's ongoing war in Ukraine is pushing many of the world's poorest nations to the brink of starvation in what has become a global food crisis. The World Food Program says higher food and fuel costs have pushed an additional 47 million people into acute food insecurity since March. That's defined as when a person is no longer able to consume enough calories to sustain life and livelihood. In Ethiopia, South Sudan, Yemen, Afghanistan, and Somalia, nearly 900,000 people already face starvation and death. Joining me now with more on this is our Africa Deputy Bureau Chief, Gabrielle Steinhauser. Hi, Gabrielle. Thank you for being here.
Sure. Happy to join you.
So, Gabrielle, you saw this crisis firsthand in Somalia recently. Can you tell us more about what you witnessed?
Sure. I mean, the level of suffering is just incredible. We spent some time in a camp for displaced people on the outskirts of Mogadishu. And pretty much everybody we spoke to there was just extremely hungry. And the levels of malnutrition, especially among children, are now already higher than in 2011, 2012, when the worst famine of the 21st century actually killed more than 250,000 people in Somalia. Just in the short time that we were there, I met several families who had lost children just in the last few days. Some lost kids as they were fleeing a record-breaking drought, and then others saw their kids die actually after they arrived in the camp, where they were expecting to find food aid, but in fact, many hadn't received any aid since arriving.
How much has Russia's war in Ukraine impacted this region?
Right. I think the important thing to understand is that the effects of the Russian invasion in Ukraine came for Somalia and the broader Horn of Africa region at a really bad time. They are going through the worst drought in 40 years. And then also several countries in the region, including Somalia, are, you know, in the grips of conflict. So you're already talking about a very, very difficult situation. And the people who are suffering the worst of the hunger now are the people who were kind of barely holding on earlier, right? Because these are people who were displaced. They have almost nothing. So, for instance, I spoke to a family who had fled in 2020 to the camps. And the mother was telling me that until a few months ago, her husband, who brings home between $1 and $2 a day, that money was enough to buy two meals of rice and beans for the family of six at the time. And now it was only enough for them to buy one meal of rice. And that just wasn't enough. And in fact, when I spoke to her, it was absolutely heartbreaking because literally minutes before we arrived at their home, which was just kind of a shack made from corrugated metal, she had actually buried her two-month-old son who had died that morning after a night of vomiting and diarrhea. And her older son, who was 2 years old, was actually in the hospital fighting an infection. And, you know, his body was weakened just from not having had enough food for an extended period of time.
Gabrielle, what are world governments and aid agencies doing to try to help this situation right now?
A lot of the aid agencies are shifting into emergency response now. But they're warning that, in fact, they just don't have enough funds, partly because the level of need is so high, partly because as food prices have increased in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, even the aid agencies are facing much higher costs, right? So in fact, what a lot of aid agencies are having to do is make very difficult choices. So in Somalia, for instance, the World Food Program has stopped a lot of the prevention work and really shift into famine response, which is to focus their aid on the people that are literally starving right now. In some of the other countries in the region, like in Ethiopia and Sudan, the World Food Program has cut rations for refugees because they just don't have enough money. So the agencies are basically facing the choice between helping fewer people or giving more people not enough, but maybe just enough not to starve.
What do experts say about when food prices might start to level out again and when supply chain disruptions could improve to help ease this terrible situation we're seeing right now?
Yeah, I think that's a really difficult question. We have seen some of the global prices level off. So for instance, the global price of wheat has recently fallen to about the level that it was before Russia's invasion. But other prices for important goods like cooking oil or fuel still remain high. And even those prices on the global market, when they fall, it takes some time to filter through. You know, some of the other issues like shipping costs, they're much harder to predict. So it's unclear. I think a lot of people are heartened by the drops we've seen just in the last few weeks, but it's not enough and it's unclear how long they will be sustained and how long it will take for people in the poorest countries to actually benefit.
I've been speaking with Africa Deputy Bureau Chief Gabrielle Steinhauser. Gabrielle, thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Thanks so much.
And finally, there's a battle in Britain over whether to abandon the metric system. Since leaving the European Union, the UK is now free to use its own measurement system. The government is now formally studying whether to return to its old imperial system. Our consumer goods reporter Sabra Chowdhury found it's a divisive issue, and changing the current system might prove challenging for businesses.
I think especially at a time of like surging inflation and supply chain disruption and everything else that's going on, to then lob in this big change that retailers might have to make on their shelves, there's worry that it could be a distraction, there could be added costs, traders might have to go out and get extra scales, or the guys who are enforcing the new system, they might have to buy sort of extra scales to go out and enforce and make sure things are going well. So I think the general pushback seems to be this will be expensive, this will be a distraction. Now is really not the time to be doing this. It's very frivolous.
And that's what's news for this Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.